What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com and iTunes. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also host of UNR weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas. And I'm joined, as always, by Director of Broadcasting, Recruiting, and Team Reporter Grayson Grundhafer. And we come to you following Baylor's loss to Texas. And we now enter the bye week, the open week, however you want to refer to it, where everybody can kind of catch their breath a little bit. And, well, with that Texas result, I think it's pretty good timing for everyone to catch their breath and everybody kind of need to lick their wounds and heal up a little bit and kind of get ready for this second half push. But Grayson, how are we doing this week, man?
Doing good. The NBA season started this week, so that was nice to finally see some basketball. I got to watch the Spurs last night, so that's always nice to see, you know, the more sports are starting to start up again. So that's good to see. This weekend, I was at the Texas-Baylor game, so definitely got to see that loss up close in person, and definitely a tough one. I think you're right. You know, this is a good time for a bye week for, I think, this Baylor team and give them a chance to rest a little bit. I think they're a little beat up. And so I think it comes at a really good time after an emotional loss. And but yeah, other than the loss, I'm doing really good this week. Just, you know, trying to figure out what's going on the recruiting trail, because that's what this bye week is going to be used for, I think.
Yeah, no, they're going to be out there, the coaches, that is, on the recruiting trail the next couple of days, looking at commits, looking at targets, trying to identify perhaps some new targets as well. Matt Rhule said earlier this week that they spent some time on recruiting on Monday and Tuesday, that Evan Cooper was going to be heading out about midweek, and then he, along with the rest of the staff, would be headed out on Thursday night and Friday. So that's what they've been up to, as well as putting in the initial preparing and plans for West Virginia next Thursday night, as well as from what he said on Wednesday, watching the Texas game from start to finish a couple of times, once as an entire coaching staff and then another time with the entire team, which is not something that they typically do, either one. They typically don't have time to go and just sit and rewatch an entire game, but that is something that they've done with this extra time this week. It's not a full-blown 2 weeks, so it's kind of a weird turnaround, but it does give them a little extra time to just kind of refocus, I think, re-energize, and also reconfigure what they're planning on doing in this second half. And man, what a brutal loss that was, because everyone knows that the win was there for the taking. And especially with Ellinger going down earlier in the game, that's exactly what you want to do. That's exactly what you want to do. Knock their starting quarterback out of the game. And not in a dirty manner at all, just the game of football being played. But we'll get into Texas to start things off with. And I'm going to put that to bed entirely after today, because I don't know about you, but I've talked about it a ton over the last few days. I know everybody on the board's talked about it a ton. So it's about time to start looking at West Virginia, but we won't do that until next week's podcast, which we'll have to, I guess, kind of figure out, because it being a Thursday night game kind of throws our schedule for a loop. But we're going to talk Texas. Then we are going to move on into some recruiting discussion and get an update on what's going on there from Grayson. Then we'll talk about the now-released Big 12 2019 schedule that has a very interesting note. Texas Tech is no longer a game at AT&T Stadium. And I think everybody's sort of been split on what's better, traveling to Lubbock or playing them every year at AT&T. I know Dallas area fans love the game, but based on attendance the last couple of years, they're about the only ones. I don't know how many people have really been traveling to that game, but it's now going to be Waco and Lubbock, and we haven't seen this in years. Should be very interesting. We'll talk about the schedule, and then we'll get into your questions from the board, the premium section, to close out the podcast this week. But Grayson, Texas 23, Baylor 17, they get the win. Literally came down to the final play of the game, and Charlie Brewer can't find Jalen Hurd because he's getting, you know, thrown on the ground for the 100th time on the day. Just not enough blocking being done on that final play to give him any type of a chance. And so his throw sails, doesn't even have an opportunity really to connect with anybody. Hurd doesn't have an opportunity. And they fall. And they fall in Austin. And that's four straight losses, I believe, against Texas now for the Baylor Bears. And obviously, it hasn't been a normal set of circumstances the last couple of years. But this was one where it's kind of seem like back to normal. You know, Matt Rhule's got a year under his belt. Tom Herman's got a year under his belt. Not that Texas has had odd circumstances, really, other than a coaching change. Baylor's coaching change, far more drastic and far more going on there. So a valiant effort, I thought, by these Bears. And I'm with Matt Rhule at the same time of they played pretty well in some areas, but they also played pretty terribly in some areas. I mean, just mistakes galore that added up and ultimately cost them this game. And one quote I liked from him this week was, you know, you can talk about officiating, or you can talk about, hey, if this one play happened or if that one play happened. But the problem was there was about 50 of those that took place in the course of that game. So it was a lot of plays that didn't happen that ultimately had them falling by 6 and now moving to 4-3 on the year and 2-2 in conference play.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, 4 in a row against Texas. And kind of one of the more interesting notes about that is the fact that 3 of those 4 games have been within 6 points. So definitely has been close games aside from last year's debacle. They've been some good, very good games. And, I mean, if you look at it, if you just take away the last 4.5 minutes of that first half, Baylor probably wins this game. And yep. That, and I know you can't do that in football because every, you know, every play counts, but the last 4.5 minutes, Texas put on, they got a touchdown from Colin Johnson on a very interesting no call there, but on the push off. But yeah, touchdown for Colin Johnson, Lil Jordan Humphrey touchdown run, and then the Cameron Dicker field goal. So 17 points in 4.5 minutes.
Colin Johnson, questionable officiating. Well, Jordan Humphrey, directly after an interception that was questionable officiating, and there's an angle, and this is my biggest problem with the little Jordan Humphrey touchdown, not with his play, but what preceded it with that Jamison Houston interception that should have been called an interception. One, Baylor should never be able to think that they can rely on the Big 12 officials, and I'm not a conspiracy guy either, but especially when they're going up against a team like Texas, just assume that you're going to get screwed on some calls. I mean, go into the game assuming you're not going to get calls that are close, especially if you're on the road, especially if you're in Austin of all places. So Jordan Humphrey's touchdown, that's what it was. But my problem with the non-interception call, and then I'm done with this, is that you had to, because I saw a couple Texas fans that had like freeze frames they put up on Twitter of like, see, the ball's touching the ground here. How long did it take them to find that one frame that looked like the ball was potentially like touching the ground? Like, that wasn't something they just like rewound and like, oh, see that right there. No, you had to like spend time and super slow-mo it down and zoom in and get like everything imaginable in order to see one single 0.001 second where that ball was touching the ground. So if you had to do that just to determine that, hey, look, see, here's how they could have called it, there is no way in hell an official could have seen anything in real time to be able to make the determination that it was not a catch. And that was my biggest issue with that. If you have to slow-mo, super slow-mo it down and freeze frame it, there's no way in real time that that official said, oh yeah, that ball touched the ground. There's no way. There's no way. And that was a terrible call. But hey, it happens, and they lost 23-17.
Well, and I'm with you on that because the ref that called it was
directly right
on
there,
top of the ball, and there was no doubt in his mind he was calling that a drop. No doubt in his mind. He didn't even think about it. Called it hitting the ground. And my problem with the, you know, the ball hitting the ground, it's irrelevant because Houston had control of the football. Mm-hmm. And if you watch it, he had his arm under the ball the whole time. Whether the ball leaks out or whatever, he still had possession. So I don't agree with that at all. And I think that for them to go back and review that and come back and say they confirmed it, I don't see how they could have confirmed it. So all the Texas fans around me were like, they thought that was a pick too. So I don't think we're just imagining things here with that. But
so point is that there's two touchdowns right there that came off of controversial calls, and at the same time, like, that stinks. That's a bummer, but they still counted, and that's something you've got to overcome. And hey, they tried to in the second half, but man, that flurry, regardless of what happened with Zebras, and certainly not blaming the game on Zebras, because Baylor had so many opportunities other than those calls to still put points on the board or to make another interception or to force another turnover. Not at all saying, like, that's the reason they lost. Not at all. But that flurry is the difference in the entire game, and if they could have just limited that somewhat, then it's probably a different result in this game. But unfortunately, you know, they gave up that flurry of 17 points in 4.5 minutes to go into halftime. And, man, I don't know if I've ever seen a team that has more trouble, and it's not weekly, but it almost feels like it in some ways, of just closing out like the last 4 to 3 minutes of a first half. It seems like they're always giving up a field goal or a touchdown, or in this case, 17 points in those last few minutes before halftime. It's really strange, and if they could ever just sort of limit that, then that'd definitely be another big step forward towards where they eventually want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. But like we talked about, there were definitely some bright spots, too.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, they played a fabulous game on defense. I felt like they played really, really well. They limited the explosive plays big time in this game. The Colin Johnson play was the biggest play of the day for the Texas Longhorns. And I don't know. I think that Baylor really took a step forward. We saw growth from Blake Lynch. He had an awesome game. Clay Johnston looked great. He finally looked a little more healthy. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's taken that next step. They were maintaining their assignments extremely well in this football game. And, you know, there were some other bright spots of guys that, you know, we haven't talked about a whole lot, but that stepped up. You know, Raleigh Tejada played a great game, had the interception. He looks like he may be the starter now.
One of my big takeaways from this game was Harrison Hand and Graylin Arnold didn't play, right? I think they played better without those guys. And the reason being, and now I'm saying, don't get me wrong, if they had them, that would have been great. It would have been great for depth purposes. It would have been great for just, you know, a different style of corner. But and maybe they would have done it anyways, even if those guys were healthy. I think Harrison, obviously, because he's a little bit taller. Graylin's only like 5'9", so him against these Texas receivers isn't a great matchup with how big they are. But with Derek Thomas and Blake Lynch out there and covered, like the height and the size.
Jameson Houston.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to think of. Jameson Houston, who's a bit taller, that's what they eventually want. That's what they want in that secondary, and you see why, because those types of guys do match up really well with those big physical Texas receivers, and Texas is always going to have guys like that from here on out. They're going to have the 6'4", 5-star guys. So I think the big corners, the big defensive backs, and even kind of the hybrid linebacker like a Blake Lynch really came into play in this game, just being able to match up size-wise pretty well with UT.
Yeah, no doubt, and I think, you know, kind of going off that as well, as Raleigh Tejada was the perfect matchup for Devin Duvernay,
yeah,
as well. You
he
know,
made his having, one catch.
Yeah, had his one catch, but also, you know, Raleigh got a pick guarding him. And so it was actually a good matchup across the board, really. You know, Derek Thomas on Colin Johnston, Blake Lynch covered Lil Jordan Humphrey a lot of that football game. And then you had Raleigh Tejada against a guy that a speedy, shifty, smaller receiver. And so I felt like it was a pretty good matchup, and I thought they played extremely well in that secondary. They made Shane Buechel make some tough throws, and really kept them off balance all day. Kind of one thing that hurt them a little bit was they didn't get a whole lot of pressure as far as sacks. They were able to get in the backfield a little bit and maybe create some missed throws, but they couldn't get sacks and couldn't really get in the backfield whenever they wanted to. They stopped the run pretty good, but the pass rush just wasn't there all night, really. I mean, they were kind of just relying on their secondary to make plays.
Yeah, and I don't know how that eventually, you know, takes a step forward, but that's been a problem now for the last two seasons, is getting enough of a pass rush, and that certainly was something missing. And that's something that Matt Rule pointed out. I asked him, after he mentioned that they had rewatched the Texas game as a staff and then also with the team, which was a great learning lesson, because there were so many different things that you could go, see, if this was different, if this was different, if you had done this, or if I had made this decision, because the coaches were culpable as well, as he said. But so many things that could have been done differently. And one area he mentioned where they were just really average was their pass rush. They just weren't great. And you got to have some of that, man. You got to have somebody to get in that backfield, and they just don't have the ability, or didn't have the ability on Saturday to do that.
Yeah, and on the flip side, Texas did have the ability to do that. Had three
over
sacks.
And over.
Yep, three sacks. Charles Amenihu had two of those sacks. He also had four quarterback hurries to go along with the 9 they had on the day, which I think is actually
a low mark.
Low mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, from what I saw in this football game. And you know, it was so tough watching Charlie, you know, just being so frantic in the pocket, because he kept getting hit and kept, you could tell he was uncomfortable in there, and they need to figure something out for that. And I know Texas has a good front and they brought some unique pressure, unique blitzes, but they need to figure out something, because nine hurries on your quarterback is not something that is going to be sustainable going forward.
No, and last year's offensive line would have given up about 19 hurries. This offensive line is better, but it's still not anywhere close to where it needs to be. I'm just wondering and just hoping for, you know, sooner rather than later, an offensive line that can allow Charlie Brewer to actually be as special as he can be. Because, man, imagine how accurate and how good he could be if he actually had some time every once in a while to just sit in the pocket and to be able to run around and kind of have time to breathe and identify. But instead, he's just always on the run or always getting blindsided. It's just, it's constant, man. And they're never going to be a really good team if they can't just eventually get this offensive line in order. I do think they're getting better, but it's just so slow. And the competition's only getting harder and harder. I mean, they're, you know, TCU's D-line's going to be very tough. West Virginia's D-line's going to be very tough. Iowa State may be the scariest of everybody as far as defenses go, quite frankly, with the way they're suddenly playing. But, yeah, man, that's got to get figured out. I just hope at some point Charlie Brewer, maybe by next year, can have a couple of seasons where he can actually just feel like a real quarterback that's not constantly running for his life.
I agree, and if they could run the ball too, that would obviously help him in the pass game as well with play action, because 2.6 yards per carry did not keep the Texas defensive line, you know, off balance at all. So they were just pinning their ears back coming after the quarterback, and that's another area of weakness for this team this week. The run game just never really got going into anything, and UT was constantly in the backfield, 10 tackles for loss. Gary Johnson, that linebacker for Texas, was just a problem.
Glad he's graduating.
Yeah, all day long he was a problem. He was living in the backfield. That was very tough to see. You know, a group that had kind of taken a step. The running game had taken a step against Kansas State, and you felt like, okay, maybe against Texas you can get that mark up to maybe, you know, 3.5, maybe 4 yards a carry. But 2.6, you're just not really keeping the defense off balance at all.
No, it's an issue. It's been an issue the entire time over the last 2 years, and I don't know, man. I don't know how, other than just patience, how it gets better. But man, alive! It's like I say sometimes for those who have complained about Jeff Nixon's play calling or whatever. So you can't do anything if you don't have an O-line, and this O-line doesn't allow them to run on a consistent basis, and it doesn't allow their quarterback to be able to do what he wants to do on a consistent basis. So they're pretty one-dimensional offensively. It's just like when Charlie can get a throw out and find one of these really good receivers, then that's how they move the football and that's how they score. And other than that, it's just kind of on a weekly basis like, okay, against this team they can run a little bit, but next week completely shut down. So I don't know. I know as Connor Galvin gets older and Khalil Keith and guys like that, that hopefully they start to turn a corner. And a lot of it, too, is needing more reps, as he'll always say, with Valentine and Frew Morgan and those guys. But, shoot, you just hope at some point it would finally just click together, because it's been about 2.5 years since we've seen consistent O-line play around here.
Yeah, well, the offensive line did get some good news for this upcoming game with Xavier Newman coming back. So maybe he can come in and provide a little bit of a spark for this team. But yeah, overall, I would say that we definitely saw a lot of improvement out of Baylor, especially defensively. It was tremendous, the improvement. I think Texas came in and played really well on defense, and so I'm not sure that I'm going to judge the rest of the year based on how the offense performed in this one game. They still, you know, they showed at moments that they could move the ball, and frankly, they had opportunities to make other plays. Tyquan Thornton dropped a touchdown that I think he would say he should have caught. Jalen Hurd dropped 2 third down conversions that could have kept drives going. So there were some opportunities that were missed that were just Baylor's own fault.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't sit back and judge like that Baylor's only going to score 17 points every game this year.
No.
But it definitely felt like there needs to be some more strides made going into next week against a team that can put up a whole lot of points.
Yeah, they need to be better there. Just bottom line, they need to be better there, and I'm not going to judge the future results for this season on this offensive line against Texas, because it is perhaps their toughest challenge of the entire year, quite frankly, defensively. It may be the best defense they see, although they still have, like I said, ISU, TCU, West Virginia still coming up. But at the same time, I do judge it from the standpoint of if you want to be the team that you want to be, at some point, no matter how good the defense you're facing is, you've got to be able to stand up to them. And so what was disappointing to me is just seeing how far away this O-line was against a team like Texas, because Texas defense is not going to get like drastically worse over the next few years. They're only going to be about what they are, or at times better, at times like maybe a little down, which is still better than most of the rest of the country, but they're never going to be that far from what we saw on Saturday. So at what point does Baylor's offensive line step up and be able to combat those guys? Because that's when you'll start really being able to win those types of games. Until then, you're going to have trouble because you're going to have your quarterback getting hit too many times or not having enough time to throw the ball. And you're right, though. I mean, it was – I don't want to focus all on the O-line because they did have their moments as well, but too many drops again, especially key drops that you can look back on and just say, oh, my gosh, that's seven. That's seven. That's maybe a catch that leads to seven. So many points that they potentially left out on the board, and that's another thing that's been kind of consistent at times this year is the drops. But a lot of what-ifs, you know, like Matt Rhule said, not just one thing, not just one official's call, not just one single thing, but a whole lot of things that added up to falling by six.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, because I had thought about it a little bit watching the game over a couple times, and what did you think of the decision to take the shots to the end zone instead of maybe trying to get a few extra yards and taking one shot at the end of the game? Because they spiked it with 15 seconds left and then ran that little run play with Ebner and got 2 yards just to get the first down, mm-hmm. and then took the two shots to the end zone. I just wonder if maybe instead of running the ball, maybe you throw it one time, try to get closer so you can still use Charlie's running ability, because 17 yards away, you're just not going to be able to use that ability at all. And Texas just put everyone in the end zone. I just wasn't sure if that came to mind for you or not.
You mean rather than the Ebner play? Like taking a shot rather than...
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Not Ebner, I'm sorry. I think it was a QB sneak for Brewer.
Yeah, he picked up the first down.
Yeah, to get the first.
Well, I think you got to get the first down there.
Okay.
So, you know, really what you look back on, if you're Matt Rhule, is, man, if I had a timeout there, you know, that would really have been the saving grace, would have been to have just a timeout to be able to kind of catch your breath and plan out what you want to do and have a moment to really organize rather than being so frantic and watching the clock. But to me, like, you've got to get that first down, and it momentarily stops the clock, but – I mean, I could see taking another, but I mean, if you don't get the first down, it doesn't really matter, right?
Well, I guess you could also get the first down and then complete maybe a 5-yard pass, spike it with not much time on the clock, and then take one shot.
Yeah.
Could have done that.
Yeah.
I just was thinking, because 17 yards away just seemed like a...
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's tough, especially when the defense is just standing in the end zone, and it just didn't seem... The Hurd throw, the last throw, if it had been on target, maybe there's a shot there, but it seemed like the defense was closing pretty hard. I just looked at it and I was like thinking to myself, I wonder if they were to redo it, if they would have rather gotten, you know, 5-7 more yards, make that, you know, 10 to go,
mm-hmm.
If maybe that would have worked. I mean, you can second guess everything, but I just watched the game and I wasn't sure if you had
sure.
a thought on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, you can... You can maybe get it done, but it should have been so hard. I think regardless of what they did, with just no timeouts and the amount of time that was remaining and with that Texas defense lined up the way that it was, I mean, I don't know how many things you really could have done that would have made too much of a difference, you know what I mean? But yeah. I see where you're coming from on that, and it's interesting. You know, it's hindsight is 2020,
exactly,
and
yeah.
I'm sure they're probably feeling that way about a few things right now.
Yeah, I bet they are. But regardless of that, it was a great drive by Brewer to lead them all the way down the field. It was awesome seeing Pooh Strickland come out, make two huge catches. Mm-hmm. You know, a local kid, that was great to see. And Charlie drove him right down the field again, just like he did against Kansas State. And you just look back and wonder, you know, what if Baylor wouldn't have given up that field goal to in the second quarter, and you can just kick a field goal there and send it to overtime. You know, it's all those what ifs. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things. You just look back and go, man, they had their shot. They definitely had their shot to knock off a top 10 team on the road.
Yeah, and it's, if anything, I think kind of energized the fan base a little bit if you're looking for a positive. And Matt Rhule didn't even take all that kindly to that when Smokey brought it up to him in their one-on-one. He's like, hey, do you realize what this did for the fan base? And he basically just defaulted to the fans who were there for K-State and was like, we appreciate those people and don't really feel like we should have to put up any type of performance to get our fans into it. You know, like he didn't look at it that way at all, but I certainly noticed the difference in kind of people's reactions, and all of a sudden a lot of people who have just been trashing him, being like really personal in some cases, you know, the dumb Jersey comments, like he's not even from there, which makes it even dumber, things like that, that even some of those types of folks like kind of, all right, I saw a little something from this team. So if anything, for every fan, I think you can kind of walk away and say, all right, they're making progress. You know, I don't think that's – I think that's sort of undeniable at this point, that there is progress being made. Now, how far away are they still? I still think they're pretty far away, but I also think that there's more to latch on to right now than there has been at any other time to believe that – they're going to be pretty good, and they're going to just keep getting better and better. And this second half of the season is normally where Matt Rhule's teams kind of close pretty strong if you look back at his time at Temple. So it'll be interesting to see, especially with a pretty tough schedule, what they can do if they can get those two wins and maybe possibly get more than that and better a bowl game for themselves.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned, oh, the fans after this game, this is when everyone decides that, oh, they're, you know, making strides. And I just look back and say, you know, if you watch the Kansas State game, Kansas State's a pretty good team. And then this week, Kansas State goes out and absolutely demolishes Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, that was a pretty big win.
And Alex Barnes had another game.
Yeah.
I mean, I still, you know, that made me feel slightly better about what he did against Baylor. But looking back at that Baylor game, still ridiculous the runs that he had. So it doesn't make me feel that much better. But, hey, at least they're not the only ones that are giving up huge yards.
And look how they corrected it this week, though, against Texas.
Yeah.
They really did a good job in the run game and consistently stopped them at the line or behind the line multiple times. So, you know, they made strides in that department. But I'm just saying, like, Kansas State was a pretty good team. Baylor got the win. I think that should – Kansas State's going to win some more games this year, too. And I think Baylor's got a great chance to win a few more games as well to close out the year. And hopefully Rhule can – create some momentum off this bye week and maybe get these guys to finish really, really strong.
Yeah, it's going to be tough with who they have coming up, but I'll put it this way. I guess about 2 weeks ago, even after like a K-State win, looking at the remaining five games, there's not many I would have said like, I mean, there's games I would have said that they could have a chance in or could possibly win, but I mean, I feel like I probably would have had them as the underdog in just about every game other than Oklahoma State. Now looking at it, I can see them winning every single game. The only problem that comes into play is that Iowa State's suddenly really good, and in Ames, that's going to be, man, that's going to be really, really tough. Not banking on that one. In Morgantown, they're coming off of a loss. They've got extra time as well. That's going to be tough, but I think it's doable. I think they absolutely could go win in Morgantown. I don't think West Virginia's as good as we maybe thought they were. And then the other ones, I feel like absolutely they can beat Texas Tech. Absolutely they can beat TCU. So there's possibilities out there. I definitely see at least two wins that they can go and grab. They just have to go out and do it, though. That's the thing. They have to go out and do it, and I think to reach a bowl game this year would be a big deal for this football team.
Yeah, that Oklahoma State game looks winnable as well.
So very winnable.
There's three games on there that you go, man, those are definitely winnable games. And the other two, while they may look like very tough challenges, I do think that both teams have a few weaknesses. And I think that, you know, you point to that Iowa State-West Virginia game. That's a top 10 team coming to your home stadium in a night game. They're blacked out. Iowa State was. I think that it was just one of those very emotional games. So we'll see if they're consistently like that from now on. Iowa State, I mean, they look good, but
yeah, they got a quarterback now too.
Purdy, yeah, Brock Purdy looks like a good one. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Baylor closes out, but I still think they could go in there and win that game. I don't think Iowa State is overly talented. I think they're very well coached. They got, you know, a few playmakers, but it's winnable.
Yeah, they typically play them close. Yeah. I might have it as the most unlikely.
I agree, probably.
And then West Virginia probably right after that. And then the other ones, I think that they've got a fair shot against every single one of the other three teams remaining. Sure. So anything else on Texas before we close the book on them?
The only thing I will say is, I don't believe in moral victories, but this was a game that I think is going to get these players kind of really believing in what's going on and kind of push them along the stretch. And they played really, really well. So I would encourage anyone, if you go back and watch that game, they played extremely well throughout the game, especially on defense. So I think there's going to be some good positive takeaways from this game, and it could push them to have a nice little finish at the end. So that's about it.
I think it's the most brutal loss they've suffered under Rule, other than like a different type of brutal than losing to Liberty to start the year, because everybody was not bought in at that point. That's obvious because multiple players were off the team by the end of the year. But this team seems to be all in. They seem to, the whole story about the suits after the game, they seem to be now all getting on the same page, and it's all starting to kind of come together in that regard behind the scenes and off the field. And I feel like, this game is a step in the right direction. Not a moral victory, not a good loss. No, it was a brutal loss if you ask the players or the coaches. That one hurt. It's like one of the worst losses Matt Rhule's ever suffered emotionally. And I would imagine the same for that staff and for those players. But can good be taken away from it? Absolutely. And I think we'll see that over the next few weeks.
I was going to say, I would probably say the second most brutal game was probably that OU game last year.
Probably.
Just looking back on it.
Yeah.
Those have been kind of two of the ones where you're like, you have a great chance to win this game.
Yeah, I would only say, though, with that one, you didn't have one play at the end to win it. Like, you were giving up Trey Sermon's. You were giving him player of the week honors, basically, in the fourth quarter. But, that was a very emotional game and one they needed because they hadn't won yet. But I think this one had an even other side to it that we'll see maybe pay off in the weeks to come and in the years to come as well under Matt Rhule. To recruiting, which is what the coaches will be doing. I think Evan Cooper's already out on the recruiting trail. Some other assistants will be out there tonight. And Matt Rhule will be out there the next couple of days as well on the recruiting trail. I think he was going to be one of the last ones to leave. But Evan went out and got a head start. He gave him a lot of credit for the turnover of the roster yesterday during the media session. And what do you have recruiting-wise for this week? Because it's been pretty quiet as the season's gone along, as it typically is. But now you have this extra time, and you can go check out your commits and your prospects and your offers.
Yeah, eight offers in the last week. So they're definitely starting to pile in the offers. Three of them are for 2019 kids and two for JUCOs that would enroll in 2019. So they'd be in the 2019 class as well. So
would they count against 2018?
2019. The 2019 would count, class.
The JUCO guys.
The JUCO guys would count for the 2019 class. But they offered Seth Coleman, a defensive end from Florida. They have put out a few offers to his school. It's Holy Trinity Episcopal in Florida. So they've put out multiple offers to his school for some younger guys. But they went in, offered the Illinois commit. He's an Illinois commit. And
they stink.
Yeah. So they're going to try to get him in on a visit and, hopefully bring him along. He's a kid that's only played football for this is his second year. So he's young, 6'4", 200, defensive end, and kind of exactly what they're looking for at the defensive end position. And an interesting note about him was I had seen his film from last year and thought he was very good. Baylor hadn't offered. And then this year he put out, his four games or mid-season. And that day, Baylor offered. So I think the coaches saw the film from this year and then went ahead and put out an offer. He looks like a really good prospect. And so it was interesting that they offered him. And then the two JUCOs they offered were Coyne Dang is the first one. He goes to Independence Community College, which is Last Chance U.
Mm-hmm.
So he might be on Last Chance U. He's a JUCO, 6'6", 235 defensive end. So he'd have two for two, I think, if he came to Baylor. So you can tell they're kind of taking a run at defensive ends, clearly, as we talked about. They couldn't get a pass rush. How do we get a pass rush? Recruit guys that can rush the passer. And then the other JUCO guy is Niadra Zuazua, and he's 6'5", 230. He goes to Monroe junior college, 6'5", 230. He's another big-time prospect, another big-time JUCO. So two big JUCO names to watch, that, you know, of guys that can come in and make an immediate impact and, you know, take this team to another level as far as rushing the passer. And I think that's what they're trying to focus on with those JUCOs. I think they see an immediate need, and they're trying to fill that with those guys. Whereas a guy like Seth Coleman is a guy that they want to bring in and develop, kind of like a B.J. Thompson is how I would compare him. Maybe not the same kind of athlete, but definitely with the growth and potential of a B.J. Thompson. Two more offers that they put out. Maurice Gaines, defensive back out of St. Thomas More in Connecticut. He is looking like he's going to Arizona. That's what it looks like to me. And he's committed there. I think he's probably going to stick. But he's a
three-star. That's all he can really do is recruit, but he can recruit.
Yeah, and you talked about this earlier. What do they like at cornerback?
Big, tall guys.
Yeah, so how about 6'2", 185?
Right up their alley.
Exactly. So definitely a guy that they want, super good athlete, and he's also a guy that has kind of added more offers as the process has gone along. He's got Notre Dame, Indiana, Syracuse, UCLA, Arkansas. So he's definitely kind of moving up in people's minds and in people's rankings. So it'll be interesting to see if they can bring him on a visit. And then the last guy they offered, actually offered on Wednesday, Calvin Wiggins. He's a receiver out of Byron Nelson Trophy Club, which is the same place where, you know,
Brandon Bowen.
Exactly. Yeah. A guy that they lost out on in that 2015 class or 2016 class. But yeah, Calvin Wiggins, wide receiver, 6'3", 190. So he's got Arkansas State, Army, BYU, Kansas, and Navy offers. And he's a kid that had a good year last year, but put out his film for this year and has clearly taken major strides in the right direction. He told me he will try to get to a Baylor game, but this weekend he's going to Cal on a visit. Does not currently have an offer, but it seems like based on what he was telling me, that he's probably going to get an offer when he goes to Cal. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes back uncommitted, because he's not a guy with a whole bunch of huge offers. So for him to travel all the way to Cal, he told me he wouldn't mind going out of state. So I'm going to be curious watching that. But with Baylor coming on late, we'll see if they can make up any ground with him. Another side note on maybe the reason why they offered Calvin Wiggins is that Yusef Terry is taking official visits to Rutgers this weekend and then West Virginia next weekend. And I'm not sure if he's going to the West Virginia game versus Baylor, mm-hmm. which would kind of be a good thing, I think, for Baylor, even sure. if they were to lose. I think that would be, you know, a sign that, oh, maybe he was there to see Baylor a little bit more than West Virginia. But those were two teams that were definitely on his radar when he committed to Baylor. So he's definitely still one to watch as far as if he's going to stick it out or not with the Bears. But, you know, when he was talking with Smokey when he committed, he seemed like he was pretty much all in. And I know he's got a good relationship with Jacob Zeno as well. So it was just interesting to see a 2019 offer come out at the wide receiver position. That also may be to supplement for Langston Anderson, who we are still trying to figure out what he's going to do. Obviously, he made his date set for December 19th, so that's 2 months away. And I have a feeling he'll be at the TCU game, and that's kind of my last note. I heard from Jacob Zeno and Logan Compton. We're still trying to get more confirmation on it, but I heard from those two Baylor commits that November 17th, the TCU game, is going to be a possible opportunity for a huge official visit group. So that will be kind of where all the 2019 guys go to that game, and it's their official visit.
Okay.
That's kind of what I've heard. I think that would also be a great opportunity to bring in a Langston Anderson on that visit, and I think they would. Maybe even King Daru. Maybe he comes and takes an official visit, even though he committed to Purdue. I think it might be that last chance. You know, maybe Peyton Powell comes. Maybe, you know, just to bring in a whole group, that whole group of guys, and hopefully give them a little bit of a bond and then bring them all in together. So that's when I would also expect these three 2019 guys to come, if they were to come, you know, with two of them being out of state and one being down the road, but there's only two home games left, so I would think that that would be a great opportunity for any 2019 guy that is still on the radar to take that official visit. So, yeah, that's kind of my main notes for recruiting, but there's definitely going to be a lot of offers this upcoming week because they're just going to be out on the recruiting trail. I think Evan Cooper will probably be out of the state since he left early. It seems that that would be logical for him to be doing that. But, yeah, it's going to be a big uptake in recruiting as the season progresses and as, you know, we get towards the early signing period.
Very good. Appreciate the recruiting update there. After this weekend, I mean, this weekend will be a good one to tune into Sikkim 365. Won't have any game threads because obviously no game, but I'm sure a lot of discussion about the other games that are going on. We're going to get to the two Big 12 games here in just a little bit, but yeah, it's nice to see recruiting kind of start re-entering the fold after being so quiet for these last few months. They had that rush in the spring and even somewhat over the summer and Jacob Zeno's big commitment and all of that. But since then, really, it's been pretty quiet. As we knew this was going to be a small class, it's grown slightly larger due to some attrition and also just, I guess, a figuring out of their scholarship situation and whatnot. But yeah, it's allowed for a little bit bigger, but I like that they're not just adding guys to add guys. They're obviously being very precise with what they're trying to do, and I'm sure we're going to see a few more 2019 offers pop up after this weekend. So definitely be tuned into the boards, premium board, for recruiting updates throughout the next few days. Something else that's occurred this week, the schedule for the Big 12 in 2019 has been released. That includes Baylor's, and just going over it real quickly, this will be the last non-conference year where I think everybody in the country will like make fun of Baylor for their non-conference, although they haven't been good enough lately for anybody to really care about that. It's only when you're good all of a sudden people want to start poking holes. But now that they're maybe showing some progress, maybe people go back to bagging on their non-conference, and this is the last time that it should not feature a Power 5 opponent. SFA will be the opener on August 31st. UTSA will follow the next week at McLean Stadium on September the 7th. And then they'll have an open week after those first two games, and then it's Rice down in Houston on the road, so they get the early open week, and after that, what follows is a grinder of a Big 12 schedule. Not sure how it worked out this way for them, quite frankly, but Iowa State will be the opener at home on September 28th. The following week, K-State in Manhattan. The week after, Texas Tech, and that's like really the big takeaway from this, or one of the big takeaways. The series no longer being played at AT&T Stadium. When it happens this year, that will be the last time that we see it until probably a really long time from now if they ever decide to resume it at AT&T Stadium. But the series itself, after a lot of discussion over the years, is returning to a home-and-home. Baylor gets Tech at McLean Stadium for the first time ever on October 12th of next season.
Yeah, that is crazy news. We were talking about it before, and I've kind of grown accustomed to liking, you know, the whole, you know, go to Jerry World, go watch, you know, Baylor versus Texas Tech. The stadium's never packed or anything, but it's just fun to watch it there. And so it'll be really interesting to see, you know, a home and home. I'm not sure that Lubbock is a destination that people really want to go to, but, you know, who knows? It'll be kind of cool, I guess, to see.
It's just so far away. It's actually an okay city, and it's actually grown a lot over the years, but it's just so far away. I mean, you have to make it a comfortable trip, you have to fly. Like a little 45-minute, you know, puddle jumper from DFW is the best way to go, but that's also expensive, I realize, for people. Because otherwise, you're driving 7 hours, man. It is brutal. I've made that trip several times, and there's just no making a 7-hour drive from East Texas comfortable. It just doesn't happen. It's, you get 3 hours in, and you're like, are we there yet? And no, we got four more left. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of like anything else. If Baylor's really good at that point, people will show up to that game in Lubbock, and there's fans all over the state and whatnot. There's probably some fans in New Mexico that are like, cool, a game close to us. That's how far away that is. But yeah, home and home resuming, but Waco gets it first, so don't have to worry about traveling to Lubbock for a little while at the very least. So no more Jerry's World. That's very, very interesting. The week after that, Oklahoma State on the road. Then October 31st, so there will be a bit of a break here. And I haven't been able to identify the dates on the calendar just yet, but they go October 19th against OSU, and then October 31st against West Virginia. So that'll be another little break in the action. Let's see.
That'll be a Thursday, I think.
October 19th next year is a Saturday. October 31st is, that'll be a Thursday game again against West Virginia, but this time it'll be at McLean Stadium. So that's where you get your other little break after having that open week after week number two. So a Thursday night game against West Virginia. Then you roll on along into November. November 9th, they will take on TCU, which is a Saturday game, and that will be on the road. But here's the juggernaut. They play TCU. Then the following week, they host Oklahoma. The week following that, they host Texas. So they're going to have West Virginia, TCU, Oklahoma, Texas. But really, just eliminate West Virginia from that in that Thursday night game. It's going to be TCU, OU, Texas, 3 weeks in a row. OU and Texas back-to-back and both at McLean Stadium.
So is OU your homecoming game?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it might have to be.
Either that or West Virginia. One of those is going to have to be it because November 3rd this year is the homecoming game. It's usually early November.
Yeah, it might be. It might be your homecoming game. So OU and Texas back-to-back, but TCU, OU, Texas 3 weeks in a row. And then they close out on November the 30th with Kansas. So Texas Tech will be not only at McLean Stadium, but will be earlier in the year than we're accustomed to, which I'm kind of for that change at this point. I'm kind of tired of being at Jerry's World at the end of the year every year. That's just me. But Kansas will be your final opponent on November the 30th. So that is the schedule for 2019 for the Bears. Should be 3-0 in non-conference easily against SFA, UTSA, and Rice. And then everybody can look forward to it spicing up a little bit in the years that follow non-conference-wise. But, boy, there's a brutal stretch of Big 12 play that's mixed in there as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I know you can go, we did it this year, but it looks like, you know, through those first six games probably, there's a lot of winnable games in that first six, and so you got to take advantage of that because that last six is, other than Kansas, is going to be a real
it's a murderer's row, man. But it's very interesting. OU and Texas back-to-back weeks. I wonder if enough fans will be showing up at that point because I mean, it doesn't get any better or bigger as far as home scheduling than having the two biggest teams on your schedule back-to-back at home. That just never happens.
Yeah, two opportunities to get, you know, maybe a big upset or maybe just beat, you know, a rival, basically.
Maybe it's a special year, you know. You can beat a couple of those teams or beat both of those teams, perhaps. Who knows? I mean, they're both home games, which is pretty crazy.
Late in the year, so both teams are probably going to be, you know, a little banged up. You never know. You just never know, and they're going to get two opportunities back-to-back weeks. Yeah, you absolutely could. That's a good position to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, really. Karma up the Big 12, be like, oh yeah, still withholding our money. We're going to knock out your two playoff contenders back-to-back weeks at our place. That would be pretty sweet, but you're hoping that you're also kind of at least being mentioned at some point next season as far as like, oh, they could be a team that does this or does that. But there's a schedule for 2019, so I know there'll be a lot of breakdowns on the site and talk about it on the site. Check over on Sikkim365.com in that premium section to get in on that action. But let's get into some questions for this week, Grayson. And we'll start off with Alpha Needle. What does Colt, Brian, and Grayson do on bye weeks? Sound like coaches are using Friday night for recruiting. Any insight into who they're visiting, what games they're going to? They're going to be recruiting, well, by the time you hear this, yes, it will be later on tonight, but they've already been on the road for a couple of days, some of them, like an Evan Cooper, as we mentioned, by Friday night. So any insight on who they're visiting or anything like that? I don't have any heads up on that.
Based on what Coach Rhule said, it seemed like they want to visit all the 2019 commits. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah, they should.
It seemed like he was talking about that, and I'm sure Rhule will probably be around the state. He'll probably go everywhere in the state, from Dallas to Houston, San Antonio, Austin, back to Waco. He'll probably be doing something like that. I think that based on how they've been doing it in the past, I would assume that Evan Cooper, maybe Coach Fran, and maybe Coach Eric Josephs will probably be out of state. Those are usually the guys that recruit the Florida and then the Northeast area as well. So that's what I would think on those guys. And obviously you would have to do that to go visit Yusef Terry if they're planning on doing that at all during this break. Other than that, I think you'll see Coach McGuire will probably be out there in the Dallas area. You know, they'll all kind of just be around. Like I said, I think the priority is looking like maybe to see some of those 2019 commits and then probably evaluate some of 2019 guys they may want to offer, because it seems like they watched a ton of film on the 2019 guys, the midseason film, and so maybe they'll be going out to try to offer some more 2019 guys that they've fallen in love with over the midseason break. As far as what does Colt, Brian, Grayson do on bye weeks, Brian has a day job.
I have no
job,
idea what so Brian and Colt do.
I think he works. Colt does stuff for the site as usual. Always, you know, we're pretty much always just working on trying to figure out what we want to add. This week, of course, I interviewed Coach Steve Rodriguez during the bye week, so put that on the website. That was, you know, Baylor baseball coach. That was something really cool I did that I enjoyed doing this week. Trying to talk to recruits, that's been a big thing during this bye week as well. And then just doing normal articles, doing normal research, and just trying to make things good for the website. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, my main job. So
there you go, Alpha Needle. Sikkim, Kentucky. Any rumors on the attrition front? No. Yeah. Nothing to even hint at right now. I think that's all pretty settled down at this point. Not saying there won't be like some guy who decides to transfer at some point, but there is nothing on my radar whatsoever about anybody. So no, nothing there. AF Blue 82, do you think number two stays vacated all year, or does the staff pull the trigger and give it to a guy? If so, is that guy Charlie? What do you think?
I would say that if he is not number two for the West Virginia game, then I don't think they'll make the change all year. I think that after the bye week, if they don't decide to do it, then I don't think they really ever will. I think this would be the chance to do it during a bye week. I would say I bet it stays vacated all year.
Yeah, unless they, like you said, do it this week. I think he deserves it. I'm surprised. I don't know what he must not do that his teammates didn't vote him that to begin with, based on what we've seen so far this season. It's certainly not a lack of work ethic, so it's kind of strange. Maybe it's just because there's a split over McClendon and Brewers. It's like you can't just pick both. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of caused maybe some votes to split or something like that. I think he deserves number two. He said he would take number two when asked about it. He would flip from his usual number, but it's a team decision, and it's a Matt Rhule decision ultimately, and I don't know if there's been any conversations like that, but I would love to see it. I think he absolutely has earned it, but for right now, yeah, I'll just assume it stays vacated all year until we see otherwise. I want to go ahead and reel off a couple here, Grayson.
Yeah. So thanks for the question, AF Blue 82. The Barbarian, with Baylor having their bye, what college football game are you most excited about this weekend?
There's about five or six top 25 versus top 25 matchups that are coming up this weekend. I'm really intrigued by Oklahoma and TCU, even though TCU is no longer ranked, and just the storyline of OU's offense versus TCU's defense. And on the other side, two units who are not that great in TCU's offense and Oklahoma's defense. So a tale of greatness on one side and not so hot on the other side. I think that'll be an intriguing matchup, and it's in Fort Worth, and Oklahoma's got to win out to have any shot of really anything that they started off the season hoping for. Other than that, I think NC State Clemson's an intriguing game, just because the Wolfpack have gotten close a couple of years in a row against the Tigers. The only thing is that is a road game for them, so that'll be really tough going into Death Valley. But, you know, that's been an interesting game for the last couple of seasons. And those are really like the top two games, that are Mississippi State and LSU, but I don't know, man. I'm not that interested in Mississippi State, so that one doesn't really do it for me. But LSU's rise has been certainly interesting to watch. So I'll go with the first two that I mentioned there, OU, TCU, and what was the other one I just said?
Mississippi State,
Mississippi State, LSU. No, actually, I don't want to include that in that top group. NC State, Clemson, okay, as another game.
Yeah, for me, I'll go with two kind of, I guess, little under the radar games. Virginia knocked off Miami this past weekend, and 19-13, big win. Fans rush the field, and you know where they go this weekend? They go to Raleigh-Durham to take on Duke, a team that beat Baylor, of course. I believe Duke is 5-1 on the season, so they're still looking very good, and I'm going to be interested to see if Duke can get that win. And then, of course, my parents went to Purdue, and Purdue has the primetime game on ESPN this week, taking on Ohio State in West Lafayette, Indiana. So I'm definitely going to be keeping my eye on that one, as Purdue's won three in a row now and have really cruised by, you know, Nebraska, Illinois, Boston College. Not great teams, but okay teams, usually pretty decent programs. So I'm going to be curious if Purdue has really made strides, and maybe they can push the Buckeyes a little bit on the road and maybe get an upset.
Yeah, their quarterback's from the state of Texas, and Rondale Moore's like the guy that when they show highlights of Purdue is the only guy you ever see. They did a promo for it on ESPN. There's like five Purdue clips. Every single one is just Rondale Moore. Where on the other side, Ohio State's got like, here's a defensive guy, here's an offensive guy, here's the quarterback, here's... And this for Purdue highlights, just Rondale Moore. That's all they show.
That's a pretty good highlight. Yeah. But, yeah, thanks for the question, the Barbarian. AF Blue 82, favorite storyline that emerged from the UT game? Lynch finding a home at linebacker, the officiating, suits on a bus, or something else entirely? What do you think?
The officiating is definitely not a favorite storyline. Maybe Blake Lynch, that certainly got to be up there for me. Just the fact that maybe he has found a home. I mean, I want to see a couple of games in a row of him doing it before I just go crazy of like, oh, he's definitely going to play linebacker forever and be great at it. I mean, I think he's definitely sticking at linebacker, but I think that that's a tremendous coup for this team if he has, in fact, found his spot. And with his size and his coverage skills and his – you know, matchup potential with a lot of guys, if they can lock down one of those linebacker spots for the next year with the next year and a half with Blake Lynch, I think that would be huge for this football team because there has been a weakness in the linebacking unit. So that one's a good one. The suits thing, I like that storyline, even though the way it was initially told wasn't exactly correct, whoever put it on Twitter. But it was still a team decision to wear suits on the bus back home. So that part of it was correct. It's just the setup wasn't exactly said correctly. But that was cool. I mean, that just shows more of the buy-in. I think my favorite storyline, actually, and you mentioned a couple of them, but I think my favorite storyline, this is going to sound weird, was how crushed they were after that game. Like, my favorite thing was listening to the emotions of Blake Blackmar and Charlie Brewer and Matt Rhule after that game, and just how much it meant, how much it hurt, and how much that's going to make them better moving forward, because I absolutely believe that it will. So just the unifying factor that result may have had with this football team, they didn't take a step forward win-wise, but I think they took a step forward as a locker room and as an approach and as a program, and I think that is probably my favorite storyline that is potentially emerging from this UT game.
Yeah, that was a great storyline to hear, you know, just how crushed they were. That's great. That means you're competitive. That
matters.
It means it matters. It means you played to win the game.
And you know that you should have.
Yeah, and so I agree with you on that. One storyline that came out for me was the defense pitched a shutout in the second half. That, to me, was a huge storyline from this game. The second time they've done that this year, Kansas was the other time. That's huge. That is so awesome to see, especially in the second half. Coach Rhule has mentioned, you know, we want to beat teams in the fourth quarter. We don't want them to score. Texas didn't score in the fourth quarter, gave the offense plenty of chances to win that game. So that's one storyline. Another one that I just found, it was just kind of defensive players in general. Blake Lynch was one. Seeing those young safeties play as hard as they did, JT Woods, Christian Morgan, both made some plays, missed a couple plays, but made a lot of plays. And it was great to see that from these young guys, these young freshmen. And then a guy that I mentioned, Clay Johnston, I felt like he was a warrior all day long. I think he showed signs that he's starting to get better. And I think after this bye week, I think he's about to have an amazing stretch in this season. I really do. I think he's finally going to be healthy and finally be flying around a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. He's probably as in need of some rest as any player on the entire roster, I would think, at this point. So it'll be a good little break for him. WTT78, after watching the UT game, do you think Tejada will be the main starter rest of the year? Also, how are we doing on the injury front? Well, you can read the practice recap or listen to Matt Rhule. Not much divulged on the injury front. Xavier Newman should be back next week. Graylin Arnold's probably still out until Oklahoma State. Harrison Hand, there's not a timetable on him, but he's probably out versus West Virginia. Nothing new on Xavier Jones. I was actually going to ask about him yesterday, but just the kind of the feel of the session, I just decided to hold off until next week when we really get into game week, and somebody, if not somebody, I will ask about Xavier Jones. Other than that, it's pretty just whatever, injury-wise, and doesn't really matter this week, quite frankly. But after watching, do you think Tejada will be the main starter the rest of the year?
I think it really depends on the matchup, and I know that may be a cop-out to say that, but I think against a team like West Virginia where you have, you know, David Sills, Gary Jennings Jr., Marcus Sims, those guys are a little bit bigger. And so I don't know how they're going to change that matchup, because there, I could see a situation where you play Derek Thomas and Jameson Houston opposite each other as well if you need size. But I love what Tejada did. I mean, if you're playing a guy that is just a burner, oh, I am all for playing Tejada as much as anyone. I think that he looked good tackling too. He was getting up, making some plays. So, you know what? I'll say that he will be the starter against West Virginia, but I don't know if he'll be the starter every game the rest of the year. I think that's too hard to say with Graylin and Harrison out right now.
Yeah, I think Harrison would come back and probably be a starter. Graylin, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's probably more matchup-based than anything else, but it's encouraging to see that from Tejada. SA Baylor fan, final question. How much of the defensive improvement in the UT game was better execution by the players versus simplified scheme from the coaching staff?
No doubt. It was execution by the players.
And I don't think they simplified the scheme either. They're not going to just, hey, guys, I realize this is too hard, so we're just going to throw half the playbook out. And, I mean, they can simplify some things, but they're not curving this to just, hey, let's win right now. It's all about, we're going to be doing this next year and the year after and the year after. So it's like the people who think that we'll just run the Browse offense until they get the new. You can't do that. You can't do that because eventually you have to learn your offense. There's no like easy transition, like just a little of this and a little. I mean, I'm sure there's areas, but to do Phil Snow's defense, and I'm not railing on you, SA Baylor fan, just the idea of like doing that offensively, you can't really do that defensively either. So I don't think there is anything just, let's tear it all down to the bare bones. I think it's still pretty complex, but I absolutely believe it was just the players playing well.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think if you're going to say anyone had a simplified scheme, I think it was just Baylor knew that Texas's scheme is fairly simple.
Yeah, it is.
And so Baylor just, they stuck with their assignments, which is what we've been talking about. They didn't allow themselves to go through the wrong gap. They were constantly there and constantly making plays. It was for sure execution. No doubt. There is no way Phil Snow went in there and said, okay, we're just going to run two plays the whole game. That did not happen. If you watch the game, you can tell that did not happen. And they made some great adjustments. I loved when I saw, you know, third and long, they dropped eight, decided they weren't getting enough pressure, so let's just put another guy in the secondary. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but definitely not a scheme thing. It was execution, and the guys played really, really well. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that. Outside of that 4:30, they played really, really well. So you want to get into some pick 'em?
Yeah, we just got a couple of games this weekend in the Big 12. Number 9, Oklahoma at TCU Saturday at 11 a.m.
I think Oklahoma's going to win this game. I think that they're gonna come in and play really well. I don't trust TCU's offense to take advantage of OU's lack of defense. So I think that OU wins this game. I'll say 38-21.
Yeah, Oklahoma by a couple of touchdowns. They're going to have more trouble scoring than they've had against most other teams, but I also think that their defense is going to play better just in this, at least in this first week under Ruffin McNeil, based on all the talk, the time off, and I don't see where TCU's just drastically, Sean Robinson's going to make really good decisions. I think he'll probably still make a couple of mistakes, a couple turnovers or something, and OU's defense will actually capitalize on that. But the OU offense versus the TCU defense will be a lot of fun to watch. And I think ultimately OU's offense will win out and put up enough to win this game. But, I mean, it's a tough game, especially early kick in Fort Worth. Not that the crowd will matter, but that's danger territory perhaps, especially because TCU's defense, if Kyler Murray's not sharp, can take advantage of that.
Yeah, they definitely can. So then the second game, there's, again, only two this weekend. Kansas travels to Texas Tech, and Kansas has actually been in some of these games, you know, recently, and then Texas Tech is everyone's on the boards, all of a sudden, favorite team in the Big 12. Don't know really where that's coming from, but what's your thought on
I think Texas Tech is better. I think Jet Duffy is okay. I don't think he's just special by any means. I think they're better with Alan Bowman in there. And it's Kansas, so they'll win significantly, probably by about 3 touchdowns or so, I think, ultimately, just because Kansas isn't going to match scores with them. And Tech's defense is playing, you know, pretty well. So I'd imagine they're going to have probably a similar game in some ways to what, like, Baylor did to Kansas, where maybe it's a, like, kind of close initially, but they'll eventually, this is going to be too much, too much horsepower to for Kansas to stop them.
I think Jet Duffy's going to turn the ball over a few times in this game. KU's been really good at forcing turnovers. I think that'll help them stay in this game for a little bit. But yes, Tech is just the better team. I think ultimately they win this game. I don't think they'll score a ton. I think it'll be something like 34-17. But I think Tech does get the job done in a close, kind of closer than expected game, maybe.
Yep. So there's it. There, that's it. That's two Big 12 games on the schedule this weekend. Everybody else has the open week, which is really strange, but everybody just kind of pressing that reset button. So that will do it for us as we close out with our predictions. Next week, not sure what we're going to do just yet as far as the podcast, what day it will drop, or if we'll do a recap or what. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out because it's the rare Thursday night game against West Virginia out in Morgantown. So, Grayson, anything before we go?
Nothing really. Just enjoying the bye week.
Yeah, enjoy the open week. Enjoy the little breather and enjoy the premium section of Sikkim365.com where we'll have recruiting notes up all weekend. Anything, if there's anything that goes on with the team, we'll have that out there as well. Not that I'm expecting anything by any means, but just like, hey, if see a player around town or something, I don't know. But there will be updates throughout the weekend. Of course, a lot of conversation about the games of the weekend as well for everybody just watching college football. But appreciate you tuning in. Definitely tell a friend, tell a family member if they haven't tuned in already. And leave a nice little review if you would like as well. That's always good. But other than that, have a great week. This has been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com and iTunes.